This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Do we have spies to spy on the South Africans? I hope so.
RG Spyman. That's our guy on the inside.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Breakfast podcast on the Off the Ball app now.
We're going to turn to golf now. So the European versus American tradition is about to have a very big fortnight. Solheim Cup this week in Spain, where Europe are going for three in a row. We'll be right across that. Followed by, on Friday week, the Ryder Cup in Rome. Lawrence Donegan is with us. Drink it in, Lawrence.
Oh, it's going to be phenomenal, especially after the weekend, Joe. I mean, 12 European players playing at Wentworth, 12 make the cut. I mean, the numbers are phenomenal. Seven out of 12 make the top 10, 9 out of 12 make the top 20, and Lowry would have been well inside the top 10 as well if he hadn't taken a quadruple bogey on the 71st hole. I mean, just an astonishing display of good form turning into the big event.
Well, this really is the reason we decided to get in touch with you, because Wentworth was on over the weekend and all 12 European team members played. They had been in Rome on a reconnaissance the week before. They pitched up. They were all grouped together, like there was that sense immediately of team and time together. So, for instance, McIlroy played with Åberg, who we will come on to, and Hovland. Fleetwood was with Lowry and Straka. Ram played with Tyrrell Hatton and Nicolai Højgaard. Justin Rose, Matt Fitzpatrick and Bob McIntyre, another group. So there's that sense of, God, the preparation is going very nicely. And then, as you say, the show of form from the European players on the leaderboard. They're, like yesterday, you've Tyrrell Hatton, John Rahm, Hovland, McIlroy with a Sunday 65, Åberg all in the top 10, and Åberg had a bad Sunday. He was in line to win that tournament. Sepp Straka right behind them, and Lowry with that 9 on the Sunday. He would have been in the top 8 if he'd managed to par that hole. So from a point 2 years ago, Lawrence, where the sense was, well, USA are going to win every one of these forevermore. There's now like a great kind of flourish around Europe all of a sudden. To what extent should we read into it?
I think we should read quite a lot, to be honest. Well, firstly, I think what you should read into, these things are never set in stone. You know, the idea that, you know, well, you think after 2016, oh, well, the Americans are going to win forevermore. And then, of course, they didn't win the next one. These things, it never kind of works like that anymore. What I would say, though, is this European team is pretty young. You know, there's, Hovland, Åberg, Højgaard. I mean, there's more coming through, Joel. So if you're looking at it now and you had to say, well, if somebody's going to dominate for the next few years, it would be the Europeans. How the worm has turned. I was looking at, when you go into these Ryder Cups, Joel, if you're a team captain, you're always looking at a couple of guys, you're going to have to hide them. I mean, McDonald's going in next week. He doesn't have to hide anybody. There's nobody, perhaps maybe Højgaard didn't have a good point. He finished T68 or something in the weekend. But, you know, then you look at his recent form, 3 out of his last 5 events, he's been top 5. So, I mean, there's nobody that the Europeans have to hide. And then you look at the American team, and there's a few guys in there. I mean, I know the big talking point was Thomas, but, I mean, he had a good, good weekend at Napa Valley in the Fortinet. Finished T5. But there's a few guys in there you think, you just kind of, how are they playing? How are they going to perform coming into this? Plus, it's away from home. So, yeah, I mean, that year of American dominance didn't last very long, to answer your question, 2 years.
Yeah. I suspect a lot of people, if they could, over the weekend, when they were watching Wentworth, they were there to see Ludvig Åberg. And most of those people probably had never seen him play before. It's the most extraordinary story in many ways. 3 months of professional, and now he is in the European Ryder Cup team. Luke Donald and his team behind the scenes have been monitoring this guy for a very long time. He is prodigious, it seems, and it's emerging the extent to which they've managed the last 8 months of his career. They made sure he got a professional start in the Middle East, even though he was still an amateur earlier this year. That went well. And then they have made a point of putting him in certain groups and seeing him up close subsequently. And I would say, listening to Rich Beam on the Sky Sports commentary, listening to Ewan Murray, listening to Paul McGinley, certainly for the first 3 days... Sunday he shot a round of 4 over, wasn't good, still had a top 10 finish. But the first 3 days, Lawrence, certainly on the television over here, the likes of McGinley, Beam, Ewan Murray, they were saying, I'm not sure there's a weakness here. This is different level.
Yeah. Different level. I mean, they come along every so often. The last one, I can remember is John Rahm coming out of the American college system. Rahm was a world number one amateur, can't miss. I mean, he won basically every two or three times he teed up in college golf. Aberg, before Rahm, it was Rory. And now we have Aberg. I first saw Aberg in 2019. He was playing something called the Carmel Cup. It was at Texas Tech. He was playing at Pebble Beach. And I thought, well, that's worth a drive down. And he won that week. And it was just different. He played differently from, I mean, these were good players, really good players. I mean, they were Walker Cup players in that event. And even then, Aberg looked different, sounded different off the club face. I mean, physically, he is quite an impressive athletic figure. Hit the ball brilliantly. There is no weakness. He putts great, chips great. He drives it great. His driving is just, you know, it's probably even might even be better than the McIlroy right now. He hits it as far, almost as far, and he's more accurate. Yeah, the interesting thing about Ludvig Aberg, here's something interesting. When he went to college, when he went from Sweden to college, he was ranked 590 in the world amateur rankings. So basically nowhere. And he's one of these guys that's just got a little bit better every single year. And even since turning pro, I mean, I was speaking to a swing coach the weekend there, and he pointed out, even since turning pro, Aberg's swing, he's tidied up his swing a little bit. He just seems to be progressing. One of these guys who just chips away at it. It's quite stunning. I mean, it's fantastic to watch. He is brilliant to watch. He's a good guy. And he seems to be, I mean, I know he went away on Sunday there. He dropped away on Sunday, but it'll be interesting to see how he handles the Ryder Cup, because this is going to be different. I mean, he can say, you know, you played in this and you played in that. This Ryder Cup thing is going to be different. You speak to the guys who've been around for years, that first tee scene, trying to hit your tee shot off the first tee, it's just like nothing that Aberg will ever have experienced. So it'll be interesting to see how all the rookies hold up to it, but him especially, because we now have so much, as golf nerds, as golf fans, we now have a lot invested in Aberg, don't we? I think. And it will be interesting. I mean, the next step, he's won on tour. Next step is to kind of dominate a little bit on the PG Tour, or at least progress, and then get into the guts of the major championships. If, you know, can you imagine if he wins a major next year? My goodness, the world will be aflutter, or the world of golf will certainly be aflutter. He's brilliant. Yes. Just brilliant.
Yeah. And at Wentworth, with the eyes of the world on him just last week, he went out with Rory and Hovland, yeah, which is a pressurised situation. Not Ryder Cup pressure, but pressurised. And he blew them both away across the first 2 days. So even listening to him, he seems very intelligent, very relaxed. And yeah, there's a bit of a humour, you know, sense of humour as well. So, I mean, he was asked on Sky on the Saturday after 66, yeah, how do we say your name? And he's like, ah, look, technically it's Joberg, but for you guys, just call me Aberg. It'll be easier. And I thought, yeah, okay, quite like him.
Yeah. By the way, you can bet your boots Rory was trying to beat him on Sunday. I guarantee you. You know, Rory would be looking at that and he'd think, well, this guy's brilliant, but, you know, I'm going to finish above him. And, you know, that would have been a lot of motivation for him on Sunday. Because he had that practice round, didn't he, in Italy? And Aberg and Hovland beat McIlroy, and I think it was Lowry, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it's kind of striking as well, the build-up to this thing. Two very low-key captains in Luke Donald and Zach Johnson. So I don't know what your sense of the importance of that is, or otherwise. Like, 2 years ago, Padraig Harrington outperformed Steve Stricker at every media turn imaginable, and it made no odds whatsoever. So in Donald and Johnson, we kind of have two types who won't hog the limelight.
Yeah, but I mean, I know Donald better than I know Johnson. They're quite competitive. Of course, all these guys are. They can be, you know, but you can, again, they'll be looking to win, but they are kind of quite, but isn't that been the trend? When was the last kind of very flamboyant, I mean, I suppose you could say Harrington, but when was the last really flamboyant captain on either side, really? I think the trend is for these quiet, docile guys.
Darren Clark has a certain flourish, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, and he got an absolute doing as well, didn't he? So maybe the quieter the better. Of course, Bjorn, and he was a gregarious outgoing kind of person. But yeah, but again, that was, you mentioned it earlier, Joe, the pairings at Wentworth in the first 2 days there. Just those little items of, oh, you always look to that. You know, how prepared are they? Those little items like that, pairing the guys together. That, you know, that, you know, that's a cliche, but that suggested that no stone is being left unturned.
Well, Donald was meticulous as a player, wasn't he?
He really was. And was, I don't think there was anybody. Well, the guy couldn't hit out of his shadow, and he was world number one for 56 weeks.
Mm.
So he was a guy who was all about, again, I don't remember him expressing at the time, but it was, he was all about these, the small margins thing. So he was trying to eke out everything he had. And I'm guessing the inclusion of Eduardo Molinari in the backroom staff is, apart from the Italian angle, he is he's a super smart guy, probably one of the smartest guys who's played in the European Tour in the last few decades. So he's a stats guy, and he already works with quite a few of the guys, I think. And so that's another added bonus. So as I say, they might be quiet. I mean, but I think that certainly in Donald's case, he is very competitive, very organised. As I say, I don't think much will be left unnoticed.
Okay, quiet and steely we'll go for. The
one
other thing I wanted to ask you about is the fact that, well, two things in one. We haven't had a close Sunday at the Ryder Cup since Medina in 2012. There have been too many washouts lately, really. And the other thing which jumps out is that seven of the last eight have been home wins, Medina being the exception, and it's literally called a miracle. So it's not easy. The home crowd is one thing, can't do anything about that. The course setup, like, this has become, you know, you mentioned Molinari and the 20 gazillion stats guys working in the background. The setup of the course has almost become the big advantage in many respects. I'm wondering if it's become a disproportionate advantage. Should we be looking at somebody neutral just setting up the golf courses so that you can't tweak them to suit your team?
That has been floated for quite a while. I think, you know, if there's another home blowout this time, then I think that will, that suggestion will gather pace, because, you know, you don't want, the last thing you want in a sporting event is predictability. What I would say, the Marcus Buzzimoni course, I don't think it particularly favours, you know, it's not especially long. You know, if you go back to Paris in 2018, it was, you know, the Americans had a big advantage in length. This time, I think the Europeans are slightly favoured in length, and I think the Americans are slightly favoured in accuracy. So that's kind of a wash. So that's where the main, you know, advantage in setting up came from, and that might be slightly taken away from the Europeans. So I kind of wonder if that will matter so much this year. Again, I think Rory was speaking last week. He wanted to turn it into a kind of long to mid iron and putting contest. He figured that would favour Europe most of all. But I fail to see how that can work on a golf course that's only 7,200 yards.
Mm.
Again, your suggestion is well made, and if it is a blowout, then I would expect that to gather steam, because it's, you know, as you say, the Americans haven't won in Europe since 1993.
Yeah.
And Europe haven't won in America since 2012. That's, you know, that's not a state of affairs that anybody wants, I don't think.
Before you go, we'll be talking about it on the show in due course this week, Andalusia in Spain, the Solheim Cup, Europe, two in a row winners. So it's Stacey Lewis's USA. She has five rookies, albeit major winners amongst the rookies. Lexi Thompson is having the slump of all slumps versus Suzanne Pedersen's Europe. Eight players from 2 years ago, five Swedes in the team. Céline Boutier, recent major winner, is in as world number three. And naturally enough, on a course which isn't about length, Leona Maguire, we're fully expecting, is going to destroy everybody in her sights once again. She took to it 2 years ago. The interesting thing here is Team Europe, maybe a touch behind in the rankings, but they're kind of favourites now for this thing.
Yeah, they are. They most certainly are. By the way, just you touch on Lexi Thompson. I mean, people were moaning about Shane Lowry getting picked for the Ryder Cup team. I mean, the idea that you would send Lexi Thompson out right now in your Solheim Cup team is quite quite scary if you're an American. Yeah, I guess that Europe now is. It says a lot to the weakness of American women's golf. It used to be utterly, utterly dominant. Now, if you look at an LPGA Tour leaderboard every weekend, there are American flags there, but not as many as there was in the past. I mean, the Asian golf, Korean golf, European golf, especially continental European golf. If you look, I'm very interested, Joe, in the kind of junior golf world. If you look at that high-level elite junior golf, I mean, the Scandinavians are coming through in the women's game, and even more so in the men's game. I'm slightly worried in the future I will look at a European Ryder Cup team, a European Solheim Cup team, and they'll all be full of continental Europe players. Mm. Sweden, you highlight Sweden. The Swedish development system is light years ahead of Great Britain and Ireland with the four, and that's now reflected in the Solheim Cup, and it's beginning to be reflected in the Ryder Cup as well. Something to watch out for.
Always good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
All the best, Joe.
Cheers. Lawrence Donegan on the line. So Solheim Cup this week, Ryder Cup the following week.